I'm Alan McGee, and I've started a new record label called 359 Music.
And I'm Pete McLeod. I'm one of the artists that's just signed to Alan's new label, 359 Music.
Everyone was like really surprised and happy to hear that you're back into music. Was Pete one of the reasons?
You can't blame that man, yes. I met Pete in Los Angeles in 2007, and you know, he was in his mid-20s at the time. I was about to stop doing music completely, and then by 2008 I'd stopped and moved my family down to Wales. He came back because there was illness in the family, and we found, so through all the shenanigans in LA, we actually ended up finding common ground, weirdly, in Coatbridge and in rural Wales on the telephone. You know, we ended up becoming like phone buddies for a long time. He inspired me more than anybody else to come back. Do you know what I mean? You know, him and Neil Young, okay? I booked Neil Young and I was prodded by Pete McLeod, so he's in good company. He just believed in me so much I had to end up start believing in myself again.
What about you, Pete? I mean, was it something that you always wanted to do? Did you always want to work with Alan?
Certainly, yeah, definitely. I mean, I would probably say I may not have understood that at a young age, but the older I got to realise how important Alan's signings were to inspiring me to be a musician. So let alone just to meet Alan in 2007 was a really nice experience, you know. But from then it's became a good friendship, and now we're actually working together, which, to be honest, is kind of like living a dream, to be honest.
How did you come to music, actually, Pete?
Probably just through listening to my father's record collection. And although he didn't want me to touch it in case I broke it or anything, but I could probably just melodies through the radio, and just it kind of just drew me in. And I'd probably say one of the finest moments was watching Kurt Cobain in the Smells Like Teen Spirit video. Ever since I seen that, I was certain that I wanted to go and learn how to play guitar, you know.
What did you call it a day in 2008, Alan? What was the reason or the actual thing that said that made you say, well, I'm truthfully sorry, I've had enough?
I think there were jaded times, and the music business, I'd been doing it since 1977, 1978, in a lot of punk bands. So I'd been doing it for 30 years, and I was 47, and I think I'd done 30 years doing the same thing, and I wanted to go and read books and watch films, and you know, like, and like watch my daughter grow up, and you know, I went and done that, and then really, I suppose, the curveball was, you know, I started curating the Tokyo Rocks Festival last year, and at one point we had Neil Young and Blur booked, and then, in the middle of all that, Takashi, the guy that was putting that together, did a deal with Warner's Japan and started this record label, 1123. He said, do you want to run it? And it took about 6 months to come together. I was going to sign Pete to that. And then we were debating, as we would every month, about the speed of the deal not happening. He said, why don't you just do it? I was like, no, I need an infrastructure. And then weirdly, within about a week, it must have resonated with me that then Cherry Red had said, oh, we owe you something like £126 from 30 years ago or something like that. And I went, all right, okay, great. And I was just waiting for 1 minute on the telephone. I suddenly realised they could do what you want to do. They could actually do it.
Wow.
You know, they could be the infrastructure. They could be the back end. If you've got the front end, the musicians and the media and, you know, the idea, they can be the powerhouse behind you. And suddenly, when I spoke to Ian and went, should I do this with an indie? That Ian's the guy that runs Cherry Red. Should I do this with an indie, or should I hang out and do the Warner's deal? Ian went, you should do it with me. And at that point, it just became very obvious that was a deal to do. I thought we were going to get a lot of cynicism towards it. We've had no cynicism towards doing it with Cherry Red or being indie. I thought we were going to get a few people who just are haters, you know, throwing stones. But it's been a remarkably smooth ride.
I think everyone's quite glad that you're back, to be honest, Alan, and giving people a chance and an opportunity. Whether or not people want to hear the musicians, that's pretty much up to the audience, you know. But I can only speak for myself. I'm really glad that you're back in the music business.
What do you think has changed within yourself compared to back when Primal Scream and Oasis and when you discovered them? Is there a difference?
I think, yeah, there is a difference because I'm a 52 going on 53-year-old man. So there's obviously a difference because you grow up, you're older, so you know more or you know less, depending on what way you want to look at it. I, in some ways, understand a lot more. And in other ways, I understand that nobody can know everything. Technology is moving so fast that it's hard to keep up with the changes in technology, never mind the changes in the music business. All I can tell you is 100% the music business in 2013 is so different from the music business in 2008. It's like a different business. It's like computers. How far have computers come in 5 years? That's how far the music business has come in 5 years.
God.
Yeah, it's so... But it still comes down to a few things. Are you good live? Do you have a song? Right? Do you know, I mean, you know, like, is it a good record? I mean, it still comes down to pretty basic stuff. But at the end of the day, musicians are coming at the general public. It's so different. Do you know what I mean? With social media and stuff, it's just so different. And it's, some of the stuff is exactly the same as it's always been. You've got to have a good tune and you've got to have talent. But other ways, it's a completely new business. Do you know what I mean? You know?
Do you think it's better or worse? What do you think?
I think it's different in a way that I think it's harder in Britain. I'm not sure about Germany, but I would imagine it's the same. It's harder for new bands to break through. But I think if you can get the mainstream to acknowledge it and you can break into that consciousness, then you can have a career. And then I think it's still there. Jake Bugg has managed to do that and he's selling 500,000 albums. Do you know what I mean? Noel Gallagher was always there, but he's back selling 1.5 million albums. If you can get into that zone of breaking through the public consciousness by getting your music on the radio and being in the newspapers and online, then you exist in that heady world of being up there.
You managed bands like The Hives. Did you find it hard to plug them in the UK as a Swedish band?
No, because we had the front guy who was so special that I just had to get TV. And then before he would go on, I'd just go, when the breakdown is, go into the audience and scream in a woman's face, right? And he did it. And we sold another 30,000 records.
Is that what you need if you, from a foreign band in the UK? I mean, that's something, because it's
He was such a good impersonator of Mick Jagger that on the breakdown to say I told you so, I got him to run into the audience and, you know, and he screamed loudly into this poor woman, 30-year-old woman's face. And it was such a moment that everybody loved it. So we sold another 30,000 records.
Yeah. I remember that moment. Yeah. And I thought, when I seen The Hives, I went, who are these guys? They're great. Yeah. Because you obviously maybe inspired them to actually just go full tilt with it. And it worked, right?
Yeah. Pete, what are you prepared to do?
Well, that's something that'll be left for indoors, I think, for just me on my own, you know. rock and roll. I don't think the world's ready for that just yet.
It would be amazing in Hamburg. You walk on in a G-string.
Right, okay. Well, you know something, I might take your advice, because it worked for The Hives, right? So maybe I'll just do that on Friday. With the Borat, maybe I'll do the Borat swimsuit thing, do that.
I've known you've been in Svengali and Q-Rix, and now your biography is coming out soon.
Yeah.
Is that something that keeps you going?
I'd got a terrible flu and my immune system had fallen to bits. And then on top of that, I then went and got myself the norovirus. So in 2 months, I was in bed for 2 months, right? I watched a lot of Netflix, right? And I kind of came out of that, got myself well, got the book done, started a record label. I don't know. I kind of re-energized because the doctor worked on my immune system. So I'm on all these pills every single day to get my immune system strong. And it's kind of maybe, I don't know, maybe it's rocket fuel that he's given me. I don't know. Svengali's, I'm the mentor of the manager. So I suppose I'm supposedly the ultimate Svengali. That's what they're trying to say. It's post-ironic irony. It's probably going to do really well. It's out next year. The funny thing is, people actually say to me, like even Bobby Gillespie, who's like my oldest friend, says, McGee, you're a good actor. The joke was, I wasn't acting. What they would do is, they would wind me up to the point, the director would wind me up and get me to do the same scene 16 times to the point that I actually was in the scene, right? And then I'd be, when I was screaming, F off, I was really meaning it. So if that's acting, call it acting. I was basically telling the guy to do one. And that's why it's a good performance.
What about Kubrick's then? I mean, that's a completely different genre, really surreal.
Well, that was really just Dean Kavanagh and me with a camera for 5 days in Wales. And, you know, we watch out Christmas Day. We've got a surprise for you on the 359th day of the year.
You know about it, Pete? Would you tell us?
I don't know about it, and I wouldn't tell you.
What about this whole autobiography thing? What made you think of telling us all your secrets?
Good question. I'd been offered it loads of times, and I actually didn't take it seriously at first. And then there was a bidding war, believe it or not, for my autobiography. I know, I'm laughing almost as well, but you wouldn't be laughing if I told you how much money I got. Right, so the bottom line is, I couldn't believe it, because I thought it was worth 2 and 6 pence, and it went for, like, a lot of money. So after I banked a cheque, I thought, I better write the book. And it kind of took me a while to get the right person to work with, but eventually, me and an editor, we did it.